Heavenly Father,
Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
Friend Beloved God,
Friend Beloved God,
Jesus Christ,
Jesus
Christ, Babaji Krishna,
Babaji Krishna,
Lahiri Mahashaya,
Lahiri Mahashaya,
Swami Sri Yukteswar,
Swami Sri Yukteswar,
Beloved Guru,
Beloved Guru,
Paramahansa Yogananda Ji,
Saints of all religions,
we humbly bow to you all.
We humbly bow to you all.
Help us, O Divine Mother,
help us, O Divine Mother,
in our efforts
to offer our lives
completely into thy light,
holding nothing back,
especially attachment to ego.
We are thine.
Be thou ours.
Be thou ours.
Om. Peace. Amen. Let's just meditate together for a few minutes. Okay. Well, we're going to talk tonight about the new renunciate order primarily. It's Ananda has always been journey, both self-discovery and discovery. When Devi and I talk about this, it's not as if we have the answers. It's rather the whole idea of the is directional. And we're going to be discovering more through how we actually find how to practice it in reality rather than just the philosophy of it. It's going to unfold. When we see, Satan tried to stop this whole movement, but we got him. Okay, so I was saying that neither Davy nor I, nor probably anyone, possibly excepting Swami, has a complete picture of what the new renunciate order really is. It's going to evolve as we actually practice it. So I think what we'll be talking about tonight is basically what we understand as the starting point that we have at this point. As I was saying, Ananda itself had a sense of renunciation, and certainly we had a deep and sincere dedication to doing God's will, to following Master's practices, to giving our lives to God from the very beginning. But it wasn't until virtually 20 years into the existence of the community that the Ananda Monastic Order got started. There was an early monastic order, but that it wasn't quite positioned correctly for Ananda and a community, and anyway, without dwelling on that, it didn't last more than, what, 3 or 4 years? The
longer, 10 years.
Was it 10 years? 10 years. Well, lasted a long time. Okay. At any rate, the point here is that this is not something new. It's an evolution of our understanding and perhaps a deeper commitment to living for God alone. Primarily, it is, in Swami's eyes, a new understanding of what renunciation means. And this is something very specifically that is broader than Ananda. He does not want it tied to Ananda. He does not want it kind of administered. He doesn't want it centralized. He wants the understanding of a new way of renunciation to be worldwide. And he ends the book with an invitation to swamis anywhere in the world who may have already taken vows of being a swami, if they feel in tune with this new renunciate order, to join in this. So it's, as I say, a new definition, and I'm not. Neither Davy or I are going to go in exhaustively into the book. It is now.
Did you say what book you're talking about?
The book is the A New Renunciate Order. And Swami has just finished writing it. We just got an email a couple of hours ago from Lakshman saying that it is being sent off to the printers, whatever that means. We don't know what printers or where or what. And there are a couple of typos in it that have to be caught and corrected. But at any rate, it's very, very fresh. But to help us get it in context, this is not something just for Ananda. It's for the world, and it's not going to be contained here, organized here, or administered here. So it's something beyond that. On the other hand, it is going to affect the lives of most of us, all of us, who live here, because as our understanding and commitment to what it means to live a life completely for God matures, that inevitably will have an impact on our life. I want to read, first of all, just a couple of paragraphs from the preface that puts it in context. Renunciation has ceased to command the respect it once had. Spirituality is on the rise, but many convents and monasteries stand empty. What people want now is a path where spirit and nature work in harmony, not in opposition to one another. Timeless principles, however, are not created by popular vote. Truth simply is. Renunciation remains the heart and soul of the spiritual life. The problem is not with the principle itself, but the way it has been misunderstood and wrongly practiced. Renunciation has become defined by what you give up, or even worse, by what God takes away. True renunciation is not a loss. It is an expansion to infinity. Joy and renunciation are two sides of the same coin. To suppress the ego is not the same as transcending it. That's a very, very important point. To suppress the ego is not the same as transcending it. At one point in the book, Swami talks about this new renunciate order as being not world renouncing, but rather samadhi affirming. And that is a very, very important point in this, that renunciate, and he goes into it in length. I'll just touch on it here, because as I say, I don't want tonight to be so much philosophical. We need enough of an understanding to know where this is going. But Davy and I want to talk more about the application to our life here in the community. But let me touch a little bit on the concept of this being not world renouncing, but rather samadhi affirming or transcendent affirming. In the past, during Kali Yuga, the definition of renunciation was essentially about what you gave up or what you pushed away. And in many cases, this led to not transcendence, but suppression, as Swami talks about here. So it became about, you know, vows of poverty, celibacy, and obedience. And we all have images of medieval monks, you know, beating themselves, rolling in the thorn bushes, and self-denial. And that became kind of the standard of what it means to live a life for God. So the suppression of the tendency, the pull of the world or of Maya to draw us in, and by pushing that away, world renouncing, there was the attempt to spiritualize one's life. That is still a very, very important part of the spiritual life. We can't simply ignore the fact that Maya exists and that Maya has a tremendous pull on the consciousness. But the definition of overcoming is not pushing away or denying desires, it's getting rid of ego. And too much focus on pushing away desires doesn't overcome ego. You can get completely control. I mean, a person in a coma, by and large, one could say, is not troubled by desires. I guess we don't really know what it's like to be in a coma, but let's assume that for the moment, that that person, the consciousness of that person, is not being attracted at all to desires for the world, and yet that person is not getting out of ego. And so the suppression of desire or the suppression of the pull of the world is not in and of itself a pathway to complete transcendence. We have to do something more than that. Much of the first part of this book dwells on what it really, true renunciation, what it's really about. True renunciation is overcoming the ego. Swami wrote quite extensively about this in the book Sadhu Beware that we've all had for a couple of years. He writes quite extensively about it in this book. But let's be clear that the focus is on overcoming the tendency to be an ego consciousness, which is separation from God. Now, it's one thing to push away desires, but that doesn't get us out of ego consciousness. All it does is kind of overcome the impediments to getting out of ego consciousness. What gets us out of ego consciousness is expansion of consciousness into samadhi. What the ego is, again, is the soul that has become identified with the body and the personality. Another way that Swami's talked about it, not in this book, but before, is the ego is a bundle of self-definitions. So what we're trying to do is overcome that bundle of self-definitions. And that is done through expansion of consciousness rather than through suppression of the downward pull, or even to a certain extent, transcendence of the downward pulling energies. So he talks about it almost as a beginner stage of renunciation. Now, first of all, when we talk about beginner stage of renunciation, we have to put it in context. As Krishna said in the Gita, out of 1,000, only one seeks me. So 1 in 1,000 are even beginning to think about the sense of renunciation. And so when Swami talks about beginning stages of renunciation, it's that in and of itself is a very, very high state. As Master said, you have to have very, very, very good karma to even want to know God. And so that's a high state. But he talks about the beginning stages of renunciation as the consciousness is basically bent upon pushing away the longings that one has for the world. And so that pushing away, you still are to a certain extent concentrated on the world and concentrated on the longings. We have to go through that stage. We don't make a sudden leap from being attracted or as the terminology in here is samsari, one who is attracted to the world of delusion and accepting it as the norm. I mean, our whole culture around us is not exactly a culture that understands renunciation, especially the entertainment media. It's not highly renunciate out there in its message. But at any rate, so we're trying to not so much look at it as what we have pushed away, what we have denied, and what we don't do, as we are trying to look at it as what are those things that free us? What are those things that expand the consciousness? So you take a concept like poverty, for instance. In the old way of thinking, Poverty is you don't have anything because you would be so attracted if you had possessions that somehow you'd be unspiritual. That's pushing that away. The new concept is you want, and Master suggested simplicity rather than poverty, but you move towards simplicity not because you want to push something away, but because simplicity gives you freedom of consciousness. See how those two are different and how important in this whole new concept that difference is. That one is samadhi affirming, freedom of consciousness, expansion, the feeling that I own nothing, I own no one, I belong to nothing, I belong to no one except for God alone. That's expansive. The other is, I can't have this, I can't have that, no, I mustn't want that, I know I must go there. That's not what's going to give us true freedom. So the movement toward something that's positive is what Swamiji is after here. I want to read now the way he gives some qualities that of a person. He talks, well, I'll put it in a little context before I read this. He talks about there being kind of two levels of a person who is giving their life to deep renunciation. One is tyagi, and tyagi includes the man would be a tyagi, the woman a tyagini. That's if there's a couple. If the person is single, they would be a brahmachari or a brahmacharini. But in either case, it's a sense of complete self-offering. And he goes on later to say that it isn't enough just to have a kind of a desire toward this, that for a person who has a desire toward it, they should have a period of what he calls postulancy. So where there's a postulant period, where you're working toward getting to the point at which you become a tyagi or then a Nayaswami, which I'll get to, is where you have an unbreakable intent to live only for God and live without, one can say, without the sense that the world is going to give you your fulfillment. You aren't going to get it through possessions. You aren't going to get it through sex or a spouse. You aren't going to get it through power or fame or any of the kind of worldly pulls. Your intent, unbreakable intent, is to live for God alone. Then he's careful to say that we have to get there in steps and stages, and he doesn't want to get it so defined that if you slip here or you slip there, you're no longer a Nayaswami or you're no longer a tyagi or whatever. But he does make it quite clear that we, before we take this step, we should be at the point where it is our unbreakable intent to live the rest of our life in this manner. Now I'll read what he says as the qualities for Nayaswami. Naya means new, and he doesn't want it to be just, he struggled a little bit with terms. He started out with Swami, but that has an old connotation or a connotation that has centuries of habitual understanding to it. Naya means new, so Naya Swami order. These are the qualities. What I propose to do here is to open the path of renunciation to all those, whether married or single, who deeply yearn to know God. What then are the marks of those whom I'd consider worthy of being accepted as true renunciates? They would be those who have achieved noteworthy progress toward the attainment of the following virtues. And there are 14 of them. I'm going to read them. I'm going to ask that you close your eyes. I'll read them relatively slowly, or I'll at least pause after each one so that we have a moment at least to contemplate that. One, they have no or very few attachments or desires. That's a very important one. None or very few attachments or desires. Two, they are without anger. Anger appears in the heart when one's desires are thwarted. Three, they accept without prejudice whatever life gives them and live by the principle, what comes of itself, let it come. Four, they never seek to justify or defend themselves, but accept all judgment by others dispassionately as experiences given them by God for their highest good. Five, they keep in their hearts primarily the company of God. Six, they are indifferent to others' opinions of them. Seven, they work without personal motive to please God alone. Eight, they are impersonal in the sense of wanting nothing for themselves, but never in the sense of being indifferent to the needs of others. Nine, they see all beings as striving toward the attainment of Satchitananda, ever-existing, ever-conscious, ever-new bliss, no matter how presently misguided the efforts of some people may be. Thus, they feel a kinship with everyone and with all life. 10. They accept nothing as their own, but only as being on loan to them for the benefit of others. 11. They view pleasure and pain equally, as opposites or dual expressions of eternal divine bliss. 12. They have meditated daily for years. 13. Because they are always happy in themselves, they are impervious to insults, outer suffering, failure, defeat, or disaster. They strive to live the ideal that was voiced by Paramahansa Yogananda, of being able to stand unshaken amidst the crash of breaking worlds. And 14, they strive to love God unceasingly, ever more deeply, in a spirit of utter submission to His will. So obviously, these states are not something that are easily attainable. Not a single one of these states is easily attainable. So for all swamis, there's a certain, unless you have achieved samadhi, one would say nirbhikalpa samadhi, there is not a complete coherence of your consciousness with these states. One might say that these are kind of a description of someone who has achieved self-realization. And so before we achieve that, we have to strive to achieve that. Before we can strive effectively, I shouldn't say effectively, because every effort is effective. Everything that we do when we're trying to lead a more spiritual life or to give our life to God is very, very effective. But what I'm trying to say here is that these states are probably beyond anyone who will become a Naya Swami. But they're ones that we should try to live by. In fact, those of us who take on this step should assume that this is our code of behavior, assume that this is our code of activity and our consciousness, and live. It's almost, if we haven't yet achieved samadhi, we should strive to live as if we had, and to be very vigilant to not allow other states of consciousness to intrude, or at least to use our will to keep our hearts turned completely as much as we possibly can toward God alone. So these are the states of, that he's talking about, of the true renunciate. And they're the states either of the Naya Swamis or of the Tyagis, Tyaginis, Brahmacharis, or Brahmacharinis. And indeed, they're the states that all of us here are striving toward, whether we have kind of explicitly stated that it that way or not. Certainly, the fact that we have sincerely dedicated basically our whole lives, most of us in this room, to living according to the will of God, this is kind of the explicit explanation of what it means to live according to the will of God. And so we're working toward that. How does this new renunciate order fit with the existing Ananda monastic order? They exist in kind of, I think, parallel universes. So we aren't going to abandon the Ananda monastic order. We will still have sevakas. I think we'll find out in practice that if a number of people take on being either Tyagis, Tyaginis, or Naya Swamis, Brahmacharis, Brahmacharinis, if quite a number of people take on that as their deep intent, and there's a vow, which Devi will talk about later, that they vow to live according to those principles. If quite a lot do, I don't know whether we'll need to have the differentiation of sevaka and life member sevaka. But I think that let's just let that float for now, work it out in practice. But because Swami does not want this to be just an Ananda thing, this isn't like the next step in the Ananda monastic order. It's the next step for people anywhere, including those of us who are in the Ananda monastic order, if that's where we feel our hearts and minds are. Okay, then he goes into a fairly long section, or at least a fairly important section, about the fact that in order to take a vow such as this, it's not fair if you have children or kind of worldly dharmic responsibilities to take a vow such as this, that it's not, it just isn't proper to do that.
Children at home.
Yeah, excuse me. I don't want to. Thanks. That's a very important clarification. What he's basically saying is that if you have people who are karmically dependent upon you, then your dharma is to righteously fulfill those responsibilities. And it would not be spiritually correct to say, I renounce all those responsibilities. I renounce owning anything. I renounce having anything, and I'm just going to live for God alone, because you've already had some karmic responsibilities that are yours. But I don't want to put that at all in a negative sense. You've drawn those, in most cases, those of us who have come into this life sincerely to live a life for God have drawn to us what we need, either for our own spiritual growth or for doing what we need to help Master's mission. I'll speak personally. As you all know, Davy and I, obviously we've been married for basically our whole adult lives and also have a child. During the time that our son was living at home, we couldn't honestly and dharmically say, we renounce all income, we renounce all sense of possession, we renounce everything, because his karma was intertwined with ours. And we had a dharmic responsibility to maintain that karma. And so during that portion of our life, it wasn't that we're different people now. We're still the same people that we were. It's just, Swami at one point talks about the different ashrams of life. You know, there's the brahmachari and there's the grihastha stage, which is where you have worldly responsibilities, and it is your dharma and your pathway to spiritual growth to honestly and in attunement with God fulfill those worldly responsibilities. And in fact, I would go further to say that part of Master's mission is to show that you can live a life where you have a family, you have worldly responsibilities, you operate a business, you have possessions, you can have a life where all of that is there, and yet you're completely dedicated to God. That is, in one sense, the essence of Ananda. And that is not a spiritually lower state, unless you think Lahiri Mahashaya was spiritually lower. You know, it's part of the change into Dwapara Yuga is that we change the definition from leaving the world to not living in the world, doing your duty in the world, but dedicating your heart and mind to God and seeing whatever you're doing as a pathway to deeper spiritual understanding and dharmic right action. And that is a pathway to God. And so the whole of what Ananda has been dedicated to is a pathway to God. But there comes a time when your karmic responsibilities, either you come into this life and with the consciousness and the dharma not to be married or have a family in the first place, or you have a marriage but you don't have children, or you have children and then you come to a point where their karma is no longer so inextricably intertwined with yours. And it's at that point, in any of those three ways of defining it, where karmically you become free I don't even want to get a hint of negativity. You become karmically free of that kind of particular process or path that you're on. And it's at that time that you would choose to become a tyagi or tyagini if you're married, a brahmachari or brahmacharini if you're not married. And those are kind of the stages, the step first. And then when that gets completely settled and there's no sense in your mind that you're ever going to move from that for the rest of your life, then there would be an application a request to become a Naya Swami. What Swami wants to do is, again, not have this organizational. So if one decides to become a Naya Swami, as I understand it, anywhere in the world, they have three other Naya Swamis who are in agreement that they're ready for that, and then they become a Naya Swami. So it's not like, you know, in the Ananda monastic order, we have a kind of a training thing and a certain organizational aspect. And that is right and proper for the Ananda monastic order because it is focused to a certain extent on Ananda as an expression of Master's particular gift and role in the world. But the New renunciate order is beyond that. And so it really is a state between you and God. Now let me see if I...
You wanted to read the different stages?
Yeah, I want to see what I have here.
It's colors.
Pardon? Okay. Pardon?
I can do the colors.
Oh, okay. Davey's going to do the colors, and I'm going to read... And then I think I will end here. So this is a chapter, this is chapter 12, helping us understand what the stage of Tyagini, Tyagi, and Brahmachari and Brahmacharini, how does that relate to many of us here? Sannyas, or complete renunciation, is not a step to be taken lightly. One must not only be ready for it, he must also convince others of his readiness. To minimize the danger of bias, personal friendship, for example, or predilection, a person should be ordained as a swami by three unrelated persons who are also swamis. First, however, one should go through the stage of brahmacharya or tyaga, preliminary renunciation. This can last for as long as it takes one to become quite sure inwardly that he is ready for full sannyas. It may be many months or years. In any case, he should have demonstrated to others also that he truly places God first in his life and accepts God as his only reality. How long should a couple wait before they commit themselves to a life of tyaga? I think it should not depend only on age. Young persons, too, may be ready, but all must prove themselves to others as well as to themselves before taking the step. The age and time, I think, should vary with the persons concerned. Men who practice tyaga are known as tyagas, tyagis, women as tyaginis. They should do their best to adhere to all the principles in this book, but remember it is less a matter of specific acts than of the direction of one's energy. Usually I would say that several years should pass before a person goes on from tyaga to become a full swami. Single men may call themselves brahmacharis. Women, similarly, may be called brahmacharinis. Married people may often do better to wait until they are past childbearing years before embracing the stage of tyaga. For one never knows, if children come, what karma they bring with them. A parent is obligated to respect his child's nature and destiny, his karma in short. If the child's karma is not consciously to follow the spiritual path, I say consciously because all beings, whether they know it or not, are on the spiritual path to God. It would do him an injustice to try to force him to embrace a way of life for which he is not ready and might delay his spiritual progress toward God by creating suppression and frustration and then rapidly a spirit of rebellion. Once a couple have passed beyond the likelihood of having children, they are free, if such be their desire, to devote themselves completely to the spiritual search. It may be added, moreover, that in cases where a couple cannot have children anyway, or if they are already committed to freedom from sex, they should be allowed to become tyagis. In any case, a tyagi couple should make an extra effort to give their lives wholly to God, to give up sex, and to seek to express God above all in their lives. They should work hard to rise above anger, desire, and attachment, both to possessions and to one another. They should support one another emotionally, act together cooperatively, and never allow competitiveness to pollute the river of their friendship. They should seek guidance of a true guru, or at least of a sincere and wise spiritual teacher. They should strive always to obey him, or at least to follow sincerely the voice of their own higher conscience. They should learn to look upon every setback as a blessing. When the time comes that they feel ready to proclaim outwardly their complete commitment to the spiritual path, they may, with permission from their teacher or from others more advanced, whom they respect, embrace formal sannyas and become swamis. Because they ought at this stage to have reached the point where they no longer see themselves as men or women, renunciates of both sexes should be given the same title, swami, It is no longer fitting for women renunciates to receive the feminine version of this title, Swamini. Because this is a new renunciate order, I recommend that all Swamis in it receive, in addition to the title, the designation Naya, that is to say new. Thus, my own name would be Naya Swami Kriyananda. Names may include the customary Ananda, meaning, as I've already said, bliss. They may also, however, simply indicate some spiritual quality, thus Naya Swami Seva, meaning service. There would be no indication in the name as to whether the person is male or female. As to the choice of the name, this can be left to the discretion of the individual and of those who initiate him or her. Regardless of any future slip in one's dedication to one's ideals, so long as the direction of his aspiration is upward, there should be no outward punishment or demotion from whatever status he has attained. Because many of the virtues mentioned here are questions of attitude, and even sexual self-control is too personal to be ascertained objectively, one's worthiness to continue to keep the title Tyagi or Naya Swami must be left up to the individual's conscience. There comes a point where only God is qualified to judge. New systems inevitably meet opposition. I can imagine people scoffing at our Naya Swamis as Maya Swamis. Let it be. A certain amount of ridicule is good for the soul and for the freedom-seeking ego. So that, you know, As I say, I don't want to go on more. All of us should read the book. We'll make the book, now that Swami has completed it, we'll make it available widely. If you don't already have it and want to get it, you can email either Davey or me or Savitri, and we'll simply email out the text of the book, and you can print it up. Swami's intending to make it available widely, and it's just a matter of, you know, going through the process of doing that. And certainly for us who are trying to live our life according to this and are already dedicated to it, we get to honestly and deservedly have a little jump on the published edition. So I think I'll stop there, let Davey continue on with some other points, and then we'll leave time for questions.
At the beginning of this book, Swami makes some very, very interesting points, again, to put it in context. The existing Swami order was begun by what's known as Shankaracharya, essentially in Kali Yuga. And the forms of it were outward forms of renunciation. And I remember when Swami was writing the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, he said it wasn't until Dwapara Yuga that masters' interpretations of the Gita, that it's all symbolic and all of the characters represent aspects of our own being. He said that could not have come out in Kali Yuga, because it wasn't, energy was not recognized as the basic building block of the universe. But now in Dwapara Yuga, we can understand a subtler meaning of the Gita. Similarly, in Dwapara Yuga, we can understand a subtler meaning of renunciation. So it isn't about form, but it's about the inner effort to transcend the ego. And he says that often again, ego transcendence is renunciation. And there's a chapter in the book, excuse me, called Ego Transcendence. Let me have a drink. It's a little dry up here.
Yeah, it is. Go, I have the undershirt on.
There's a chapter in the book where it's similar to the chapter in Sadhu Beware, where he gives little techniques, and it's so charming, because here you think, oh, I'm going to renounce everything, and I'm going to never smile, and I'm never going to laugh, and, you know, all these old images that come to mind. But it's things like, if someone tells a good joke, don't think you have to tell a better one. Let them have the final word. If someone insults you, laugh. You know, it's just like little points, And these are the building blocks to ego transcendence. And it makes it so real and so doable. And again, he uses that image, which he's used for years and years, of the fire at the spiritual eye. And anytime the feeling of I, me, and mine comes up, you just burn it up in the spiritual eye, and a fire visualized there. And so it's such an exciting new prospect, because you realize it isn't about, as Jyotish read that part, what God takes away from you. It's about finding the freedom of no longer having all the thoughts of I, me, and mine revolving around yourself. And he changes the color. You know, we all know this. We've seen pictures of Swami, but I wanted to go into it a little more. What I'm wearing is close to the mark. This, which it's kind of hard to see, this is for the Naya Swamis. This is pretty close to the mark. It's a bright, light, royal blue is what he's calling it. And he says, for Tyagas and Brahmacharis, he recommends continuing wearing Sangha gold, Sangha yellow. And but I just want to read why he talks about using blue rather than the traditional orange or gheru, as it's called in India, that the Swamis wear. He says, orange goes with declamation, saying this is what it is. Blue with sharing and with an invitation to share with others. Orange goes with imposition. Blue with sympathetic self-offering. Orange, when outwardly directed, can induce egotism. Blue can inspire self-expansion to infinity. So it's interesting because he's putting together in this Tyaga stage both single Brahmacharis and married Tyagis. They would all wear the color gold. All the time, no. But more and more as you feel comfortable wearing it. And then the blue color would be for the Naya Swamis. But it's, again, he's tuning in to a reality that where he's saying that old color, gheru, was an image of authority. But if you take that too far, it's just another bundle of self-definitions. I'm a Swami. I'm a renunciate. I'm a this. I'm a that. I'm different. I'm better. I'm special. And pretty soon you find yourself out on the same cliff that you started out with, except it's a different set of ego self-definitions. So what he's trying to do and what we all need to try to help define, because it's so subtle, even when I think about it, I start going in one direction and all of a sudden I realize I've boxed it into a form. And no, you missed the point, go back. And it's really about learning to walk that very narrow edge where you think everything that is of ego, I'm giving up, not because I want to be important, not because I want to be better or different or anything, just because I want freedom. And whether, you know, if this can, we can all be doing this, no matter what stage of life we're on. And also, I think some of you may know this, but for many, many years, particularly the people who work with adolescents in our community have been begging Swami to write, a rite of passage for adolescents, and he has done it in this book, a wonderful rite of passage with beautiful vows. And because he's talking about, we're starting at one end, but we have to also start at the other end where children are raised from the beginning with understanding the importance of self-control and moderation and all these things. So it isn't this big, we have to cross a big threshold the way most of us have had to do who, you know, just started off being guided by worldly values. So, and also I wanted to mention here, before he left, Swamiji asked Jyotish and me if we would do some classes on spiritual family life and spiritual parenting. And we will do that probably in the beginning of the year. And it would be primarily for those with young children, but anybody can come. So, because there is a continuity. If you begin your family life and your child raising picking it up from the right string, not of attachment, not of to self-protection, or this is mine and I don't care what anybody else tells me about my child. I have to, you know, I know, but to realize I am only a custodian. Everything is on loan, whether it's my child, whether it's my spouse, all of it, anything that I own. And so we're going to start talking about that so we can lay a foundation in the community. So there's a continuum. It isn't like, well, I'm raising my family, and so I'm not at the point where I can live a life of inner renunciation. Simply not true. Simply not true. If you don't start right where you are, you'll never get to where you want to be. So we're trying to look at all of our life, and really, the more I meditate on this and try to say, what does it mean to me? What does it mean for every moment of my life? The more happy I become, the more free I feel, and the more I realize this is what we always wanted. It just wasn't either Swami, wasn't the time right for him to bring it. We weren't ready to bring it. But another important thing is the role of Kriya Yoga in this inner renunciation, because what we're doing with Kriya is we are drawing the consciousness up, burning up the karma that locks us in ego identity. And so isn't it interesting, Lahiri Mahashaya, avatar householder, the harbinger of Kriya Yoga into this age, and remember, it was he who asked Babaji, can't we give it to people who are not formal sannyas? Formerly, it had only been given to sannyas, Kriya Yoga. And Babaji said, God has spoken through you. And so there it was, Kriya Yoga being disseminated to householders. And now we're coming full circle, because we've been practicing Kriya Yoga. We've been trying to more and more burn up the samskars that hold us in ego identity, and then we come full circle, and now we are at the point where it isn't like I have to cut this off and I have to cut this off. More you have to get in the flow in your spine, and more you just live. That brahmacharya means flowing with God. Tyaga means non-attachment, inclination toward non-attachment. And then sannyas means renunciation. So those are the more clear definition. So flowing with Brahma, what a wonderful flowing with God. What a wonderful way to define a new renunciate order. I think that's mainly what I would like to say, and I can't think of anything else that would be too relevant. Now, I'd like to read these beautiful vows that Swami has given us. They're extremely moving. And then we want to give you all time for questions and answers. One last thing. When will the new Swami order initiations take place? It could be any day. We don't know really what Swami's planning. By the way, he's planning a trip at the end of November to go to Medjugorje to meet the visionaries. There's one woman who still receives visions of Mary on the 2nd of every month. And so he's leaving at the end of November to be there for the December 2nd visitation. But he called us Saturday morning, I believe, Swamiji, and said, you know, did you get the book? And we had and read it. It wasn't the final, but close. And then he said, are you able to come over at any time? And we said, yes. So we don't really know. It could be any time. And there'll be first wave, and then there'll be subsequent waves and subsequent waves. So just as Jyotish suggested, I'm going to read these vows, and let's sit upright and really try to feel in your heart the meaning of it for you. Well, first we'll read the Brahmacharya vow, then the Tyaga vow, and then the Nayaswami vow. And excuse me, before you withdraw from the world, you know, Master's birthday, we will take vows for we still have the sadhaka order, the lay order, and the sevaka, and the life sevaka, as Jyotish mentioned, at least for now. But you'll notice, those of you who have taken the vows, there's a lot about cooperative obedience to the leaders of Ananda in all its various aspects, and especially the director of the Ananda Monastic Order. You'll notice in these it's totally free from any sense of Ananda, from any sense of leadership at Ananda. It's really between the individual and God. So appreciate that difference. Okay. So let's sit up and close our eyes. This is the renunciate vow of Brahmacharya. I understand and fully accept that the true purpose of life for all human beings is to seek God. In pursuit of that goal, I offer my own life unreservedly to seeking my divine source. I will retain no ego-gratifying goal in my life, but will strive always and above all to please God. I will look upon life as God's dream drama and also dream entertainment. I will accept as his gift whatever comes to me in life. I renounce attachment to things, people, places, and all self-definitions except one. I will define myself always as a child of God and will obey whatever guidance he gives me. I offer to thee, Lord, my life, my desires, my attachments, and the fruit of all my labors. Bless me and strengthen me that I may become ever more perfect in this, my holy vow. And now the renunciate vow of Tyaga for people that are in a married situation, but with children that are no longer dependent on them. I understand and fully accept that the true purpose of life for all human beings is to seek God. In pursuit of that goal, I offer my life unreservedly to seeking my own divine source. I will retain no ego-gratifying goal in my life, but will strive always and above all to please God. I will view my partner as a channel of God's blessing, guidance, and strength, and will strive always to be a similar channel in return. I will endeavor always through the love and respect I feel for my partner to reach out in love and service to all humanity. I will try never to see anything in this world as mine, but to view everything as a manifestation of God. I will look upon life as God's dream drama and also dream entertainment. I will accept as his gift whatever comes to me in life. I offer to thee, Lord, my life, my desires, my attachments, and the fruit of all my labors. Bless me, strengthen me, that I may become ever more perfect in this, my holy vow. And finally, the vow of complete renunciation for the Nayaswamis. From now on, I embrace as the only purpose of my life the search for God. I will never take a partner, or if I am married, I will look upon my partner as belonging only to thee, Lord. In any case, I am complete in myself, and in myself I will merge all the opposites of duality. I no longer exist as a separate entity, but offer my life unreservedly into thy great ocean of awareness. I accept nothing as mine, no one as mine, no talent, no success, no achievement as my own, but as thine alone. I will feel that not only the fruit of my labor, but the labor itself is thine alone. Act through me always, Lord, to accomplish only thy design. I am free in thy joy and will rejoice forever in thy blissful presence. Help me in my efforts to achieve perfection in this, my holy vow. For I have no goal in life but to know thee and to serve as thy channel of blessing to all mankind. So we want to give you all an opportunity to...
Two little details, it would be good. I think that letter said to prepare for the typesetter, were it not printed yet, so it's not being printed yet. But the second thing is, we don't need corrections on grammar and all of that from people. I'm getting a lot of phone calls. We have plenty of time for that. I just want to...
Okay, good, thank you.
Is that
yeah. Did you all hear? Don't send the book is getting prepared for the typesetter. It isn't sent to the printer yet, and we'll have time to do typos and corrections like that. And Skip is already getting a lot of calls, and he doesn't need any more.
Okay. Any questions about the...
I have a question. Maybe a suggestion. Where he says...
Stand up so people can hear you.
Where Swami says our search for God... Maybe he could say we could improve our knowing of God.
He's very careful with his words, and I don't think he's going to take any suggestions at this point.
He won't take editorial suggestions at this point. Each of us defines that in a slightly different way. And, you know, if improving our knowing is... meaningful and important way for you to understand it, that you should retain that. There are a lot of things in this book about leaving for the individual his own discretion and his own way of working with these concepts. Most people, and probably most of the people that this is written to, do in fact think of their attempt as a search. Master's book was Man's Eternal Quest. And so I think there's a valid case to be made for both.
You know, one thing, important point that I think we touched on, but not clearly enough, the very end of the book concludes with an invitation to swamis. That's what it's called. And it's inviting people, existing swamis. And he said, you don't need to even accept Yogananda as your guru. He said, I hope you would think of him as the Adi Guru, the first guru of this order. But if you're already, let's say, a Ramakrishna Swami or a Swami made by
Anandamoyi
Ma, he said, you don't have to change that. But it's more if you understand that this is a new kind of renunciation. So this is important for us to understand too, because this is a movement, and we are a part of the movement, but we don't define the movement. And that's important to make that distinction. So, questions?
Can the Brahmacharya stage be the one before the Tyagi stage, or are they parallel and go toward the Sannyasi stage?
Do you repeat the question?
Can the Brahmacharya stage be the one before the Tyagi stage, or are they parallel and go toward sannyas or renunciation? No, they're parallel. And so in our grouping, I think we would see the Sevaka stage as being the preceding stage. And it's only at the point you make the decision that if you're unmarried, you're going to live without a partner. If you're married, you're, as he said in there, you're seeing your partner basically as God. Otherwise we'd have what we have for our monastic order, which would precede that.
Darn.
I was a little surprised
surprised by Jyotish's comment on the need for not having worldly responsibilities. I was familiar with the terms of not having children anymore to look after, but I know that a lot of us have taken on responsibilities for businesses to help in some way or another.
Maybe I'm glad you, either you misunderstood or I misstated. So about not, he was surprised by a statement as he heard it of not having worldly responsibilities. I would say more attachments to worldly responsibilities. And it's really always about attachment. If you have a responsibility that is dharmically yours given by God, and it isn't springing from your own desire, then of course that's something that you should do. But the real aspect here is to be completely free in your heart that you have given everything to God. And so there's a, you know, I was thinking more in terms, if I said that, more in terms of having a lot of, I don't know, desire for success in this, or I want to achieve that, and I'm going to achieve it through this kind of thing. So it's really a question of whether you're doing what you're doing for God alone, or whether you still have some karmic, egoic impetus to do that thing, and therefore, by doing it, free yourself from that.
Are we thinking that the first Naya Swamis, that our Swami will designate them, and then from there people will come to them to see if they can be?
Savitri's question is, are we thinking that the first Naya Swami will designate, and then they will come to them? It's hard to say. I think as long as Swamiji is around, he'll be involved with the process, but certainly, and if you notice, this was an interesting, he said three unrelated swamis. So let's say, you know, I don't know, the head of one of the centers thinks somebody is really right, and so they can't, it can't be people that happen to be in the Naya Swami married stage who would be the three. Is that clear? No? Okay. Three unrelated Naya Swamis would need to approve a new Swami. Two of the three cannot be married. Okay? To each other. Yeah. To each other.
Three unrelated Naya Swamis have to approve another, assuming that there are three. Before that, it's Swami. And as to answer Savitri, I think as long as Swami's around, and especially for as it pertains to us, since he's known us and worked with us for basically our whole life, I think he'll be in on those decisions.
Maria has a question, but I want to make a comment here because before, and we'll give you the chance, because this is an important point. As I look around the room, I see people in all different phases. Some people have just gotten engaged to get married. Some people are about to have a baby, you know. And it's important for us to, even if you're not in a life situation where you can take the step into this order, please don't separate yourself from it, because that will create divisions in the community, and that won't be helpful. See that this is what we're all doing. I mean, just as I watch people raising children right now, and I think they're doing it on behalf of all of us. And so some people are becoming Naya Swamis on behalf of all of us. Some people are getting married on behalf of all of us right now, et cetera, et cetera. So really see, we're all, really all it's saying is, we are trying to achieve a state of ego transcendence, and each one of us will be playing it out in different ways. But it would be really a disservice if we, you know, go our separate ways tonight and people leave, well, okay, part of the community is going to be doing that, but I'm not going to be doing that. We're all doing it. We're all doing it in our own way. Maria was...
My
Parvati said that's the way you get rid of your ego. So Maria had a question.
We call our Swamiji now Naya Swamiji.
Yes, in fact, he signed the letter Naya Swami Kriyananda.
Oh. And some of the videos that he did in Assisi, he was wearing his blue.
What will the habit be? It's in process now. It'll be that blue for the Naya Swamis. It will be, for women, it will be about longer like this, but all one color and with kind of a neck and a zipper down the back and probably a little hood of some sort. For the men, it will be the same but shorter, coming about knee length, but with the pajama pants. So that's what...
And without the button... in the front, somehow they're still working on trying to design it, but the idea would be a plain front and down to about knee height for the men, and probably matching rather than contrasting slacks.
Yeah, Stephen.
How will ministers plan? Will ministers be encouraged to be nice?
It's entirely up to them. It's a separate track.
Yeah. How, he asked, how will ministers be encouraged to be Naya Swamis? It's completely a separate track. The ministers are ministers of Ananda Church, and that is an organizational aspect. Swami is very careful. He touches on it in several chapters and then devotes a whole chapter to how this is completely separate from any... position one might hold in an organization. He has a whole chapter that just because you have a higher position in an organization does not make you more spiritually dedicated. And this is entirely about your own inner spiritual relationship with God. And so he wants to be sure that just because you're a minister or a light bearer or the head of a department, that doesn't equate or relate to the fact that you're kind of automatically have a leg up on something.
Although, yes, true. And those who become Naya Swamis, if they are light bearers, will probably wear a blue shawl rather than the Sangha Gold shawl. Okay, Dina.
I just was struck by the expansive universalness of this whole movement and thinking to how really the whole like impetus of it came right as he was having a resurrection in a sense in Italy, that he had really almost died and then coming back to life. This is what poured out of it. And I just
And in fact, the preface is
exactly
very directly that. Okay.
David Eben.
The significance of the hood or the cowl. I think all Swami said to us is that he had some idea in mind that he wanted to connote immediately that this was a spiritual order, and that visually did it. Because he's also thinking about India, where the outfit that we're wearing is basically what a lot of people wear there, even though the color is somewhat different. And so I think by having a cowl, it's a detachable cowl at this point as it's being designed, by having that, it differentiates it.
And there, Maya Devi and a woman that they work with who's a professional pattern maker are working with it. And then this isn't only our thought, it's not... we have not mentioned this, but it's so inexpensive to get things dyed yellow or blue in India and have things made there. Maybe that could be a little business for them to have it, things made there. Okay, other questions? Savitri.
Sorry to have to ask a second question, but in a married couple, if one decided they did not...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that he addressed it. Savitri, well, you can do it.
Yeah, in a married couple, if one decides that they would like to be a Naya Swami and the other doesn't, I think that's perfectly acceptable as long as the one becoming the Nayaswami has the complete permission and support of the one who doesn't feel to take that step. And I think as long as that's there, then it's fine. If it isn't there, then they'll have to work it out.
Okay. Well, everybody had their questions answered? Okay, why don't we just close with a prayer?
Yeah.
And, you know, really what we've just been talking about, this could be a real watershed event in the spiritual movement in the world today. This is big. It really is. Let's approach it that way. And let's honor it. I mean, I know people that, you know, we go out there and then we get into our little personalities and people make little jokes and this and that. Let's try not to do that. Let's try to hold. This is like a baby that's just been born, and it's so delicate, and let's honor it, and let's hold it in the light, and let it draw its own identity and its own clarity without saying, well, that's funny, and that's funny. But let's, as I say, this isn't ours. If we're lucky, we can be a part of it, but it isn't ours, and we're just watching this happen now, and it's a great blessing. So, let's close with a prayer. Heavenly Father.
Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Friend, beloved God.
Friend, beloved God.
Great Masters.
Great Masters.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Babaji Krishna.
Babaji Krishna.
Lahiri Mahashaya.
Lahiri Mahashaya.
Swami Sri Yukteswarji.
Swami Sri Yukteswarji.
Beloved Guru.
Beloved Guru.
Paramahansa Yoganandaji.
Paramahansa Yoganandaji.
Saints of all religions.
Saints of all religions.
We humbly bow to you all.
We humbly bow to you all.
Bless our lives.
Bless our lives.
With the expanded vision.
With the expanded vision.
To see a new path to God.
To see a new path to God.
Bless us.
Bless us.
That we may move forward.
That we may move forward.
Courageously.
Courageously.
And joyfully.
And joyfully.
To offer our lives.
To offer our lives.
Unconditionally.
Unconditionally.
Into God.
Into God.
Om.
Om.
Peace. Peace. Amen.